Well, he's played both sides of that. You know, he's played left and right. I mean, this year, it's a very hard thing to come in as an offensive lineman, as a rookie, and play well. And Roger, honestly, just got better and better and better and better. Mature guy beyond his years. I think a year in the weight room is going to really serve him well, as it will all of our guys. But I think that we were very – I can speak for myself and say I was very happy with what Roger did. It's a very tough position to play as a young player. I think his future is very bright, as are the guys that he played with on the offensive line this year. And we're excited to see what he looks like next year.
So that's Eric DaCosta talking about Roger Rosengarten, and we'll get to the future left tackle in 1 second. But we finished last segment killing Trent Baalke, the GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I think Shad Khan, the owner, heard us, because during the break, Jaguars GM Trent Baalke was fired by the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jason.
He never should have been hired in the first place, and it's bizarre that he kept his job last year when a lot of people thought he would lose a tug-of-war with Doug Peterson, and instead everybody stayed. And it's even more bizarre that he was letting Trent Baalke do player extensions in season, late in the season, when people thought Trent Baalke would be gone, because you're not going to get a coach you want by keeping Trent Baalke. And they let Trent Baalke do those extensions, and they let him sit in on coaching interviews again, and then they finally reached a point where, yeah, we're talking about Robert Saleh as maybe being the only guy who'll go there. And what do you know? Trent Baalke's gone. Look, I don't want to lose Todd Monken. I really enjoy watching Todd Monken's offense here. I enjoy studying it. I enjoy trying to figure out what's going to come next and what other wrinkle he can come up with. I was a big Todd Monken fan years ago.
Yes.
Back when some friends of mine were working for the New York Jets, I begged them to hire Todd Monken. Some agreed with me. They hired Adam Gase instead. It didn't work out so well. So I think I've thought for a long time Todd Monken's a head coach. And if Shad Khan wakes up, and he may not because he's been in a 12-year slumber, but if he wakes up in Jacksonville and looks at the landscape and talks to smart football people, he doesn't need some young whippersnapper for Trevor Lawrence. He needs an older, wiser head who's dealt with all different types of quarterbacks in all shapes and sizes in various systems at various levels. So we'll see. We'll see if this emboldens them to double back out to some people.
I just can't. I say I can't believe, but they're just a dumpster fire organization. It's self-sabotaging 101. Why are you waiting a couple weeks into the search? It took Liam Cohen saying, yeah, I don't want to work with him. Why?
Well, the funny part
these
is,
these guys are fools, man.
Yeah, everybody told Shad Khan that they won't be able to get a coach if they keep Baalke. He said, no, I'll show them. We'll keep Baalke. They couldn't get a coach, and so now he fires Trent Baalke. But alas, so if you're just tuning in, Trent Baalke's been fired as GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a day after this morning Liam Cohen decided to stay in Tampa and pulled himself out of the race for the head coaching job. So let's get back to the left tackle situation. You heard Eric DaCosta talk about Roger Rosengarten. Roger Rosengarten had a fine rookie season. He's a guy that's played on both sides. And remember, at Washington his senior year, he was the right tackle for a left-handed quarterback. So he was blocking for the blind side, Michael Penix. So is he the left tackle next year? Is it a guy that's not here? Because I don't think any of us think it's Ronnie Stanley.
No, not after today. Look, they're not naive. I think if there was a short-term deal to be done with Ronnie Stanley, they would have sorted that out and it had been announced. And Ronnie Stanley's going to go get to the market. And they know once he gets to the market, there's going to be enough out there for him that somebody who doesn't know him as well as we know him is going to give him more than we're willing to in terms of most likely guaranteed money and how far it's spread out. And I don't think Ronnie Stanley's going to crush it like he would have 5 years ago, certainly.
Yeah, he did crush it.
When he did crush it. But I'm just telling you, there's not a lot of answers out there in free agency, and there's a lot of teams that need a left tackle. So, yes, I think today was very telling, and I think if you study these teams long enough, you can kind of see what's going to happen before it happens. And the way Eric DaCosta spoke about how they like to draft offensive linemen, their success drafting offensive linemen, the way they build their team. Yeah, there's a little bit of a learning curve. You take your lumps, but then you've got them for years, young and cheap, right? They don't accrue statistics the way skill position guys do. So even when you go to them early, with advanced metrics, I think there's a feeling of we can get over a little bit. I mean, I think they're drafting a tackle. And they might draft two tackles. One, oh, you know, we've seen them draft multiple guys at positions.
Yeah.
And so now we take a tackle in the first couple rounds and a tackle in the fourth or fifth round, and we keep them around, and we have some sort of veteran guy, at least here in camp, whether that's McCary or somebody else, and we let that sort itself out. I mean, I think, hey, if the kid we draft in the second round this year looks better on the left side than Rosengarten, then we leave Rosengarten on the right side. But now you're talking about a really young and cheap offensive line.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about a lot of money you can sink into other places if we've got a left tackle in his second year, a right tackle who's a rookie, two guards who aren't making any money. And then, I mean, even if you do something with Linderbaum centers, I mean, they do better now than they did 10 years ago, but it's not like paying a tackle. Yeah. If all you're paying is a center.
And they're probably going to extend Linderbaum.
Yeah, right? But they don't have to do it this year if they don't want to.
No.
Yeah, I think, like, I'd be kind of shocked at this point if it's anything other than that. The only other thing I'll entertain is we're 2 weeks into free agency and there's a left tackle they like who they can get for, like, who they can rent for $1 million a game or less than it, you know, $15, $16 million guy. And they might just say, hey, it's a fake 3-year deal. It's only going to be, the cap hit's going to be $6 million. Who cares? But I don't see anything besides that. And I think it's more likely than not that they draft and let all and sort it out these kids.
I think they go in that direction as well, because playing this game with Ronnie Stanley again, if you give him a contract with real guaranteed money, and I think that he will get some of that, Jason, like you're saying, because the free agent market at left tackle, he's easily the best guy out there.
It's not even close.
Yeah, so he's going to have demand, but you're playing the risk of, is this guy going to play 17 games again?
Well,
he's never played 17 games.
The other thing you have to remember is the world of Ronnie Stanley before this offseason, and that is he was motivated after the haircut. That guy was at every training camp practice. He practiced every day. That was not Ronnie Stanley before this year. Yeah. And quite frankly, you know, I don't think it's going to be Ronnie Stanley again once he gets paid.
And Ronnie Stanley, last year, his agent had a chance to see what the marketplace was.
Yes.
They didn't come in blindly and say, hey, EDC, we'll take whatever you give us. They're back-channeling. You call tampering, call whatever you want. It's doing your job. It's representing your client. And this was the best they had. They know they can do exponentially better than that now.
Because he had no value because of all the injuries and missing so many games ever since 2020, you know, 2020 through 2023. And you're right, Ken, where he hadn't been practicing every day probably since 2019, since he suffered that ankle injury in the 2020 season, where I think you're risking a lot running it back, hoping that he's going to stay healthy and be as effective as he was, because 12 months prior, you're rotating him every other drive.
And a reminder, we came into this season thinking there was no way he was getting through this season.
No.
So he got through this season. To double down and think you're going to get through another season plus give him more money, I just don't think that's smart business. Not for the Ravens. Now, a team that's never had him in the building before and is desperate at left tackle, they can go give him 20-some million dollars, which I think is going to happen, Jason.
Well, like, I mean, stop me if you heard this one before, but what if Andy Reid decides, like he did with Orlando, hey, we'll get this guy, we signed him to a 3-year deal, that's really a 1-year deal, we got to get Joe Tooney back inside. Like, I don't need him. Hell.
That's a great fit.
They don't even need to play him every game early in the season. Yeah. Like, they could literally spot him and gear him up for the playoffs. Like, I mean, I don't know how great his market's going to be, but like, that's the kind of thing where
he's
that would make sense.
That would make a ton of sense.
Unless he's got an injury I don't know about, he's getting $20 million. Like, I don't know how many years he's getting, but he's getting 20. Like, that's left tackle money, right? Like, that's what he's getting. He's probably the best left tackle in the market.
He is. Now, I also haven't studied the draft, so I don't. I mean, it feels like at least six go in the first round every year.
Every year.
I haven't done any work on that yet. I don't know if this is, you know, as strong or deep as some recent ones.
Bobby D says it's a great D tackle draft.
Well, he would know because he's studied all those guys.
Yes,
he can tell you about high school D tackle.
Yes.
You know, do teams decide we can do what Andy Reid did and get more creative and try to take guards and turn them into tackles even more? I don't know, but just off the top of my head, that would be one where it's like...
That makes sense.
But to that point, You bring in Ronnie Stanley, you can put Tooney back at guard.
That's what Stanley said. Think,
yeah, that's where it's why mess around with it.
Yeah, and then you know they've drafted some kids, let them compete on the right side for a year, and one of them still might end up on the left side. But yeah, Ronnie Stanley's market's going to be really interesting.
Coming up next here on the program, we get a little Terps in. The Terps are getting ready to play at Illinois tomorrow night. It's a 9 o'clock tip, which means pregame coverage here on 105.7 The Fan begins at 8. Are we starting to get a little concerned about freshman center Derek Queen? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
He wasn't happy with the way he played at UCLA, and I think he kind of came out with a little bit more focus. I think the game comes so easy to him sometimes on the offensive end that it gets a little, I would say, lackadaisical. I thought he came out tonight with a very, very good positive energy that he was going to be aggressive.
So that was Kevin Willard after the Minnesota game, and that has been by far his best game this month. He had 27-7 in that game, talking about Derek Queen possibly being lackadaisical. He's had four games of single-digit points this month, and four of the last six, three of the last four have been in single digits. So I asked the question, are you concerned about Derek Queen?
In the short term, yes, I'm a little concerned in how they navigate this in this brave new world of college athletics, where even if you give a young man the millions of dollars that he's worth, because he's generating more than that for you, they have every year's a free agent year, every year's a portal year, you know, and you've got to keep them happy and bought in even when things aren't going as well as they would like, which starts to have them thinking about draft status and draft order and all those things you use to motivate him, like this mock draft and not that mock draft early in the year. Well, guess what? He now sees that, you know, his stock has taken a turn as he's gotten deeper into this Big Ten schedule, which isn't surprising, but it's a lot for him to handle. It's a lot for them to handle. And I do think a little less of him at critical moments in times would be more for the team in the short term, but then you also keep it real. You want him here next year if he doesn't go in the draft, no matter what, because that would be vital for your program. Yeah. And if you're going to go anywhere in March, he's got to be playing, you know, like he did against Minnesota, not like he did against Washington and
or Nebraska.
Look, you're going to have ups and downs, but when he oscillates from being the best player on the court, period, some games, to, if you look at advanced metrics, the second or worst, basically the least efficient or second least efficient player on your team, that's a large chasm. That's a wide swath. There's not a lot of middle ground with him right now. Really, there's no middle ground with him right now. And so I do think they're at a critical juncture.
I thought that was a very interesting comment when Kevin Willard made that immediately following the Minnesota game. We're saying maybe he's not as engaged at times because he's so talented and he's so gifted. And we've seen that, and we've seen it on the defensive end as well, just failing to box out at times, getting a rebound, or turnovers have been really up. He's got 16 turnovers over his last four games, and that's kind of why I asked Naki, and you see some of that on Twitter, where the big games earlier on in the year, he was getting up for. I mean, we were at Marquette. He was really good.
How about that Purdue game on the road?
The Purdue game on the road where he's, you know, playing to the crowd, the away crowd, where I don't know what this necessarily is or what it boils down to. You've brought up maybe he's at his best when they're really out in running and getting those fast break opportunities, but this hasn't been the same guy over the past couple of weeks.
Well, and they haven't been the same team, and they've lost the rebound margin five of the last six games, and that's huge. And he was one of the reasons you felt better about that, is it's not all on Juju.
Yep. And,
we've now reached a point where if you're talking about efficiency and rebounding, Jordan Geronimo's on a whole nother plane than than Derek Queen right now in regards to, I think, ability to leap, want, get off, anticipation, much stronger hands. Like, I don't know how much Willard wants to situationally, like, substitute in and out, in and out, in and out. It doesn't seem like he wants to do it a lot. I think he may want to rethink that in the short term. I think he may want to be a little quicker if it's not going good with Patrick Jesus, I did it again. With Derek Queen, the first 5-6 minutes, by that TV timeout, it might be like, and I'm not saying you got to ride another 5 or 6 without him, but something I think needs to change here. Because again, Nebraska, he's got a BPM of -8, second worst on the team. Northwestern, -1.6, third worst on the team. Minnesota, +14, second best on the team. UCLA, -8, second worst on the team. Oregon, +6.5, third best on the team. Washington, -14, worst on the team. That's not going to fly. Like that, that's not, like, you're not going to win a lot of ball games that way.
What's crazy is he was a beacon of consistency at the start of the season. First 13 games, he was in double figures every game but one. He had 8 against Mount St. Mary's, and that's a game where he probably played limited minutes because they blew him out. Like, you looked at him almost every game. He was giving you double-digit points and close to double-digit rebounds. And then you start with Washington, and as you said, Jason, it's like up and down, up and down, up and down. It shoots in ladders, and when he's bad, he's really bad. Against Nebraska, he didn't hit a field goal.
No, he's forcing passes. He's too passive under the offensive boards. To me, he looks out of step a lot of times in a half-court offense, and he's pressing. And I think Kapari and Geronimo, especially in a situation like this against an Illinois team, that if you're not ready early, they might run you out of the gym the way this Maryland team's playing on the road especially. I think he's got to be willing to mix it up a little more than he has been.
Especially from that Nebraska game. The fact that they shot 13, 12 free throws as a team, it's not good enough. I mean, the strength of this team is those big guys down low.
Ben, you got any thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, it's tough because, like, you know, I said yesterday, a guy does not start that well as a true freshman and fall this way, and I think a little of it has to be on the coaching staff and not willing to adjust. And when Jordan Geronimo's playing well, he's played in the Big Ten for years, he's got to get more time. But I think can't remember what game it was, but when Julian Reese screamed at Queen on the court because Queen wasn't boxing out, and we've never really seen Reese react like that on the court. And again, he's grown as a leader, they've said, and stuff
was
like that.
Was it the Northwestern game?
I think it was the Northwestern.
It was the last road game.
And we've never seen Reese react like that on the court. And no matter what has happened with him as a leader, I think Reese is starting to see some lackadaisical stuff too, because you could just, like, the mistakes that he's making are evidently freshman mistakes. The turnovers, spinning into a charge, immediately talking to the refs after every single play. And they need him to be better. So it's tough for Willard because sitting him for much longer is not helping this team down the road, but right now it is. And the next two games, you have to go 1-1 here, or you'll be last 4 in, first 4 out. You're probably not going to, realistically, with how they've played on the road. But if you can split with Illinois and Indiana, that's huge. And good Queen will help them win one of those games. But if he's playing bad, they will not win either one of those games.
We need to make a switch here with the show. Tim Murray got caught out, so he's going to do 3:45. So T-Bone time, if that's okay with you, Bone. Can you TMI totally. TMI next? It's T-Bone time, TMI with TAM. What you got?
And we're going to get back into the Ravens season-ending press conference. And there was one snippet of Eric DaCosta's quote in regards to Mark Andrews that jumped out to me and got me thinking about this offseason as a whole, and we'll play it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
There were a lot of takeaways from the season-ending press conference earlier today, John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, and everyone wanted to hear EDC's thoughts on Mark Andrews and his future, and in his quote, he was mentioning that Andrews is in a contract year, as is Isaiah Likely and Charlie Kohler. But in the middle of that quote, he took more of a big picture approach about his roster.
We'll have some decisions to make moving forward. Not as many, I think, you know, tough decisions this year looking at it, which I'm thankful for. But obviously, as we look out, we'll have some tough decisions after next season. So a year from now, we'll have some tough choices and decisions to make regarding players.
We mentioned earlier in the week, in the past few weeks, really, there aren't a ton of impact free agents that the Ravens have. Ravens have four unrestricted free agents that played over 40% of the snaps this season. One of them being Marcus Williams, playing 53%, so he's gone, that's whatever. Brandon Stevens is another one, playing 92.4%. We heard Eric DaCosta's thoughts on that. Sounds like he's
going to be a free agent.
And then the other two, both are on the left side of the offensive line. Ronnie Stanley playing 98.1%. Patrick McCary playing 89.9%. We've already said we don't envision Ronnie Stanley coming back. Patrick McCary, who knows, but the Ravens could end up rebuilding there. And I'm saying this because he mentions the difficult decisions that were there last year, and there were some that he had to make. Where, think of impact starters that they lost. Jadeveon Clowney had 9.5 sacks. Ronald Darby played a big role when Marlon Humphrey went down with an injury. They traded Morgan Moses, who was starting for them at right tackle. Patrick Queen went elsewhere. Geno Stone had 7 interceptions. He left as well. And they were hamstrung in terms of money, like they're always up against the cap. But they don't have all of these guys that are going to be leaving that we expect. And really, guys that you're thinking about cutting or releasing, the main guy is Mark Andrews. There really aren't any other guys, logical candidates, that would save you a lot of cash or cap space for Eric DaCosta to consider outside of Mark Andrews. So I just wonder, and we'll get into this more and more in the coming weeks and months when free agency does start and looking at possible candidates and names, but is this going to be more of a year of where the Ravens run it back? Are you okay with running it back, considering that they didn't even get back to where they were the prior year in the AFC Championship? Is this an offseason where Eric DaCosta is going to focus more on internal matters, like a Kyle Hamilton extension? We mentioned Linderbaum. Or Darius Washington to a lesser extent.
Taking care of Bateman. Taking care of Van Noy.
And we were talking a lot during the trade deadline heading up to it. You got 11 draft picks. If you trade Mark Andrews, that would be another pick potentially. You could go for a player there. Are you going to use all 11? Is this an opportunity for trade? Is there going to be an impact free agent that they bring in? Because they aren't really doing a ton of guys coming back in terms of unrestricted free agents that are going to make serious money.
Well,
I just kind of wonder if he was telling us there that it is going to be a lot of running it back in terms of personnel.
I think he was, and I think we also heard him talk about people like Patrick Ricard in a way that Eric DaCosta didn't talk about Mark Andrews. Now, John Harbaugh did.
Yeah.
Because John Harbaugh's got to be the good cop in these situations. John Harbaugh's the one who's sitting in there with these guys before and after games, getting them fired up to literally risk mind and body to play this sport. And he's got to stand behind them. And he's got to be their guy because they're his warriors. And hey, if they can't get what they think is value for Andrews, or they just decide we don't want to get rid of Andrews, then he's got to coach Mark Andrews. Oh, and probably coach him in the last year of a deal where he knows his future's somewhere else and he's making less money than he probably thinks he's worth. So there's that. But DaCosta didn't talk about him that way. And how many times have we heard them refer to people as Ravens for life?
Yes.
I didn't hear Eric DaCosta call Mark Andrews a Raven for life. I heard Eric DaCosta talk up the depth and strength of his tight end's room, which, if anything, tells me they might be able to withstand not having a 30-year-old making more than everybody else combined in that room. Like, I don't know. If they bring the fullback back and they pay likely and Kohler continues to develop and they draft another tight end because they have 11 picks, is that going to be a dramatic fall off? Like, I actually read it as where he could have said, hey, Mark Andrews is on this team next year. Or, hey, if you've seen what Mark Andrews has done for us over the years, I don't think you're going to look at his salary and say that that's a problem. He didn't approach it that way at all.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes they use Raven for life after they leave, though. Like, remember, Orlando Brown was a Raven for life after he was traded. It's like after they're gone, they're still always a Raven.
As much as Mark Andrews has done here, as long as he's been here,
yes.
Eric DaCosta, take that, whether you want to use that term or not, I didn't get vibes like that guy doesn't get out of this building.
No,
guys like that don't finish their career somewhere else. We've got unfinished business to win with Mark Andrews. Go look at what our quarterback's done in his career with Mark Andrews versus everybody else he's thrown a football to. He didn't take that tact. In fact, he refused to say what he had what discussions he had with Mark Andrews.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Mark Andrews is the headliner and one of the big dominoes to fall this offseason, him and Ronnie Stanley. But I guess my question is, are you expecting a quiet offseason in
yes.
terms of departures and new arrivals?
Yep.
I think so, too. I think that's kind of what he was saying.
Could the biggest departures be in the coaching staff?
The bigger shakeups could
yes,
be.
That's what I mean.
Possibly. And I don't think they're going to reshuffle their entire defensive staff either. But I think, you know, the other day, I can't remember if it was on air or off air, where we were talking about different bits and stuff you should start getting ready to start doing. Oh, yeah, soliciting for the dates and stuff. Like, yeah, bro, I don't think these guys are making a whole lot of noise. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's going to be news coming out of the castle left and right this offseason other than so-and-so signed a team favorable contract extension.
I think it's going to be more of, and we brought this up during a break as well, Khalil Mack to me just screams a Ravens move.
Sure.
Where it's not going to break
the
bank for you, older pass rusher at the end. I think it's going to be
get away on the field with Robinson more on early downs, and Khalil Mack comes in and sub packages. Yeah,
does what like Von Miller's doing in Buffalo now.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely going to be the tenor and tone of this offseason, and that's why I think the Andrews thing. If we get to the combine and it's clear that they're at least, you know, engaging in conversations, which I think it'd be really foolish for them not to take the playoff game out of it. I think it'd be really fully foolish for them not to. Stuff like that will probably get a lot of attention because I don't think there's going to be, I don't think this is going to be a very magnetic offseason for the Ravens.
No, I think it's just going to be internal moves that are going to be the big headliners. Kyle Hamilton record extension.
Which would be huge.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, that happens, and those kind of things happen later usually, but we talked about, when do we hear Eric again? Well, if they have a Kyle Hamilton press conference, extension, there will be a press conference. That's the kind
if
of thing.
If they trademark Andrews for a fourth-round pick, I don't think
there will not be a press conference for that.
Probably not.
No. Yeah. There will not be a press conference. Hey, coming up next, our best bets with our buddy Tim Murray from VSiN Plus. Notre Dame lost in the Natty. How's he holding up? We know he's a big Irish fan. Tim Murray joins us next here on The Fan. College football season is over. Ohio State are the national champions, first ever 12-team playoff. We'll talk that and some best bets with our buddy Tim Murray, who joins us from VSiN, joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Tim, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So how are you feeling about your Fighting Irish? You're obviously a huge fan. They were down big. They made a game of it, but I guess your takeaways from the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, ultimately the best team in college football is the national champion. Ohio State clearly figured it out after the loss to Michigan in the regular season finale. As for Notre Dame, look, I mean, as a Notre Dame fan, it's the best season they've had in over 30 years. Outside of the blemish to Northern Illinois, they were able to beat the SEC champ. They were able to beat Penn State, win two major bowl games for the first time in over 30 years since they won the Cotton Bowl in January of 94. So, yeah, as a fan, it was bittersweet to see them come up short. Certainly, after that first drive, I'm like, oh, my God, this might actually happen. And Ohio State was able to just kind of be the bully and be the better team. So, valiant effort. A couple, I thought, tactical mistakes, which was a bit uncharacteristic, to be honest, guys. I've been so impressed by Marcus Freeman through this playoff run, and I thought the decision to fake a punt on 4th-and-2 when it felt like the world knew he was going to fake that punt instead of just keeping it with Riley Leonard on the ground, You know, you're down 13-15, the option to kick a field goal, which, you know, look, these are things that can be debated. But as I pointed out on social media, when you're throwing kind of a perfect game and you're getting to the upper echelon of coaching, which feels like that's the trajectory for Freeman, you're going to get criticized for small mistakes. And all in all, I thought he did a great job. I thought he outcoached Kirby Smart in the Sugar Bowl. I thought he outcoached James Franklin in the Orange Bowl, but came up short. And, you know, look, big picture, guys, you know, I think I've been talking to you about it. I've been all in on the expanded playoff from the jump. Could they certainly use a couple tweaks here and there? Yeah, I think so, certainly when it comes to the buys. But if this isn't case in point that this is the right thing for college football, then I don't know what is. Two teams that would not have made the 14 playoff both played for the national championship and proved throughout that they, you know, deserve to be there. So hell of a run for Notre Dame, but look, Ohio State, you know, no doubt was the best team in college football. And it's funny because, you know, living in Baltimore, you guys certainly hate a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? I don't understand the mindset that some, I'm not saying all, but some Ohio State fans have where they're still a bit disgruntled because you lost to Michigan. Okay, you lost to Michigan. You won the national title. Get over it. You know, you won the national title. Get over your loss to your hated rival. But a fun tournament. You know, last thing I'll say about it, guys, and I don't know how you feel about it, but, you know, considering what we saw on Sunday with the heartbreaking loss for the Ravens, it does feel like that Monday is just a bit anticlimactic for college football.
Bad spot.
It's like every day, everywhere you looked, everyone's talking about the divisional games, and it's like, oh, here's the national championship. So I don't know what the sport needs to do in that regard. You know, I think the obvious answer would be to eliminate conference championship games, but that's never going to happen. And I am unwilling, even though I have no say in the matter, to touch Army-Navy. Stop messing around with it. I don't get it. These people saying, oh, we should move Army-Navy. The ratings are through the roof. It's something that is so tradition-rich in the sport. Like, it's perfect for this sport. It deserves to be isolated. Don't touch Army-Navy. And I don't think they will. But, you know, some of the bright minds in college football are trying to make this a hot take. It's don't touch it. It's perfect where it is, and it deserves to be by itself.
Well, Tim, college football over. College basketball in full swing. Do you have any best bets for college hoops tonight?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny because you've been talking to me for however long talking college football, and I love situational spots for college football. College basketball might even be better. You know, it is chock full of situational angles each and every week. So the one game that I did bet, and I don't love that, you know, the lay a number here, but I feel like this is a pretty desperate spot, for Nebraska tonight. Nebraska coming off four straight losses. Terps beat them on Sunday. I know a game that I think, Ken, you were tweeting about. Maybe got a little too close for comfort there.
Yes.
But ultimately, this is a Nebraska team that's pretty good, and they've dropped four in a row, and they're back at home after the loss to the Terps on Sunday. And then you've got USC coming in, you know, after they lost over the weekend, but you got that weird travel spot from the West to the, you know, to the Midwest. And I think this could be a tough spot. So, you know, sometimes you see these situational angles where you kind of rally the troops. I think Nebraska as a 6-point favorite is a look for me there too. And then if you don't want to lay the six, I paired them on a separate bet with North Texas on a money line parlay. North Texas at home against Temple. Temple last week had an upset win over Memphis. They followed it up with a win over Tulane. So put that together kind of in that minus 137, minus 140 range. So those are two bets that I had for this one. I want to point this out real quickly because I don't know how it's going to play out tonight, but have you guys been following the magical ride that is Doug Gottlieb's coaching debut?
Oh, it's not been good.
I saw he lost to like a Division II school or something.
Yeah, he lost to a Division II school in Michigan Tech. They have lost all nine conference games so far, and they're currently riding a 15-game losing streak. So we will see if the Green Bay Phoenix can get their first win in conference play tonight against Indiana University of Indianapolis. They're a 2-point home dog. Just a quick other note here. Speaking of poor coaching debuts or new areas, John Calipari, it's been a disaster for Arkansas since he's got there. And I have been on the wrong side of a number of these bets as I took Arkansas. I'm ashamed to say it. I have taken Arkansas 4 times in conference play, and they're 0-5 ATS, in addition to being 0-5 straight up. So I don't know if tonight's the night for Arkansas. I'm not touching it. I have vowed them off. But Boogie Flan, their best player, in my opinion, he is done for the year. So things going south pretty quickly there for old Coach Cal in his debut season at Arkansas after leaving Kentucky. By the way, the SEC this year, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not keeping tabs on it, you know, I'll tell you what, they complained all they wanted about football, right, where they didn't make the championship game. Maybe we should focus solely on basketball down there in the South, because apparently they're a basketball conference. It is loaded, absolutely loaded with talent this year in that conference.
Tim Murray, let the people know what's going on at VEASAN.
Yeah, you can catch me every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Masson and Masson 2 with the Tailgate Show, VEASAN Primetime, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. And, guys, I just wanted to, you know, I know yesterday was a tough day in the area. Just wanted to send my condolences to the Medhurst family.
Yeah.
Oh,
had an opportunity to work with Pete, you know, for 3 years on the Navy broadcast. And the tributes yesterday on social media were really touching. And you could just see how much he meant, not only to the Baltimore area, the D.C. area, Navy. He did so much. You know, I lived in Anne Arundel County before moving out here to Vegas, and he was very, very involved with Anne Arundel County. You know, worked his butt off every which way, did everything. And you could see how many people Pete affected in town, in Baltimore, in D.C., you know, in Annapolis. So my heart goes out to his family. Gone too soon, just devastating. But Pete was an incredible person, man, and we're going to miss him. He's going to be missed quite a bit. So sorry to end on a sour note, but, you know, the line I'll leave you with is his touchdown call into the checkerboard end zone. Loved hearing that on Saturdays, and he'll be missed, man. Heavy day, and my thoughts go out to his family and to everyone, because you could sense just the heavy hearts around the Baltimore, D.C. area with that news yesterday of his passing.
Well said, Tim. Thanks as always.
Thank you, buddy.
We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. See ya.
Coming up next, the hot stove, I guess, is still burning in Major League Baseball. The Orioles, do they still have moves under up their sleeve? Jim Bowden, former executive MLB Radio, The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the O's offseason so far and what more they can do. Jim joins us next here on The Fan.